Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Show, Jambo number 5. Yep, any excuse to say that, but Robbie Nielsen's Hearts have lost 4 in their last 5, so there's some tenuous linkage right there. Robson and Geronimo, 4 straight wins for Barry, catapults Aberdeen back into the third place fight, and he's blue dabba dee dabba, Derek McInnes, and he wins points, but will there be enough to avoid relegation? Hello, my friends. I'm Andrew Slavin, back once again, like the Renegade Master, to bring you the bizarre and the brilliant from the wonderful world of Scottish football. And helping me do so, as always, firstly, she's the queen of Premier League producing. It's West Ham's Laura Brannan. Hello, Laura.
Hello.
Have you come down from Scotland's pumping of Spain last week?
Absolutely not. I am still high the kite. Struggle to get into the domestic weekend. I'm always like that after the international break. I'm just like, no, I can't worry about league football. The following more international games. It's always like that. It's like a proper hangover.
Oh, delighted. I'm happy for you. And he's Scottish Thunder Down Under. Button smashing extraordinaire. This football filmmaker, Finlay Marks. Hello, pal.
Hey, how you guys doing? Laura, are you like the inverse version of every other football fan where the rest of us are just like, oh, another international break, breaking up the league season? You're just like, oh, is that another stint of league football we've got to suffer through now till the next game?
Absolutely. I remember when I first got into football, it was the 90 World Cup, but when it finished, I remember saying to my dad, so when does Scotland play next? And he's like, well. And I was like, what? I was absolutely heartbroken that I had to wait. I mean, at that stage, it was like a couple of months until the next qualifying matches. But he was like, oh, you need to wait 4 years for the next World.
You didn't sit there and go, well, actually, you'll need to wait probably another 23 years until you see them in a tournament.
Devastating. Oh, I didn't tell you guys last week. Because I was home for the Scotland games, I got back to my estate of mum and dad's, and I got back to a huge pile of old VHSs sitting on my old table in my old bedroom. Oh my God, this was amazing. So my
now
dad
we're
dug
talking.
Out all these, these old videos. It was everything from when I was about maybe, what, 10 until about the age of 20 maybe. Some of them were good. It was like, oh, the Tea the Park that I went to, there was a highlights from that. Some of it was like music videos and things from like SMTV Live and CD UK. But the best ones were the football ones, which was the majority, to be fair. I think I counted about 80-odd VHSs.
Whoa.
And it was the most random games.
Oh, you're just talking about games that you've literally taped off the telly, like Sports Scene and Scott Sport and stuff like that. These aren't
literally
actual
that.
Like VHS you could buy in Woolies or whatever.
Oh, no. Oh, this is DIY VHSs. So you
even
buy
better.
Like a blank one. I would just record random games, random highlights. The peak football geek thing is I used to record news bulletins.
Wow.
So when the news bulletin would come on STV, which I ended up working on eventually. So, you know, like 18 minutes past six, I'd be sitting there waiting with the record button to record anything that felt relevant to little geeky Laura at 12 years old.
That's amazing.
And I had all these different news packages from like journalists I went on to work with in
no
the
way.
Future.
Wow.
The Sunday in between the two games, I just sat going through all the 80-odd videos. And that was my entire Sunday. It was just spent down memory lane.
Football VHS, like honestly, you're talking about my love language here now, Laura. Like honestly, this is my thing. In emigrating over to Australia, there was a lot of stuff we threw out and didn't take with us. Not so for my DVD collection and my VHS collection, just because I can't seem to tear myself away from the brilliance of things like Partick Thistle's championship winning video from 2001. Or
wow.
One of my absolute favourites is one called Battle for the Premier Division 91-92. So it's the season I think Rangers ended up winning championship number 4 of their 9 in a row. But it's not just from their point of view, it's from the whole division's point of view. So some of the players and the goals, I think there's like Mike Galloway that was playing at Celtic, basically did nothing but score 30-yard thunder bastards that season.
Collins into the path of Galloway, out of a shot. Oh, what a goal by Mike Galloway. Oh, he doesn't just score goals, this fellow, he scores spectacular goals.
John Collins scored an absolute stunner away at Dundee United as well.
Ball by Rogan. Collins. Oh, marvellous goal by John Collins. Well, his first goal was brilliant. That one really was out of this world.
Hans Hielhuis was just unbelievable for Aberdeen.
Great name.
It's my sweet spot of watching things. I don't think I've got many games taped off the telly, apart from the one that I do remember I definitely have, is when Rangers beat Hibs. Was it 7-0? Round about Christmas one time. It was the game where Gascoigne got booked for booking the referee.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that would have been, what, 1995 round about then. So I've got that one. But yeah, oh, just I could talk about it all day. Love it.
Oh, it was like after I went through them, my dad was like, okay, so how many are you throwing out? Absolutely none of them. Do not touch a single one of these videos.
Yep. I can see Laura now off to Snappy Snaps in London, getting them all digitized.
I could need a suitcase to bring them all down here.
I just can't wait until you're a parent yourself, Laura, and then you're able to excitedly sit your kids down to watch like a rusty, crusty VHS version of Hearts versus Partick Thistle from 1997, just being like, aren't you so excited to watch this with me? No, Mum, no, what is this?
Here's the Goal of the Month nominees for December 2000-2001 season. Come on, you want to see Zero Ali scoring for Aberdeen, don't you?
Damn Skippy, absolutely.
Big men are up from the back. El Mahani, right foot. Whipshot. Oh, jeezy peeps, man.
Right, we didn't kick things off in a normal fashion last time, so let's go back to our, you know, old ways. Some funnies from the weekends, guys. Laura, kick things off for me, please.
So it was Andy Constantine's birthday.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So not long before the game, nice happy birthday tweet going out. You know, have a great day, Andy. 6 minutes into the game, he gets sent off.
Poor bastard, man.
That's the first thing Gardy was hoping for.
And against Aberdeen as well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
He obviously had to jump the train to get to his party up in Aberdeen. What was that story about John Hartson doing the rounds when he first joined Arsenal? And it was Paul Merson said to him, like, I've heard you've got a reputation in training for going in hard. My horse is running at Cheltenham or whatever like that. Like, I need to be out for a few weeks because I need to look after the horse or whatever that is. So John Hartson was basically like, it's my first day in training. He's like, no, just a couple of weeks. Just get me in the ankle or something like that. And then I can be injured. A long story short, he put him out for about 6 months.
Whoa, that's brutal.
In training. Yeah, I think it's in Hartson's book.
At Copa 90, when we did the documentary around the Super Classico Copa Libertadores final, there were stories of actual players at the time who were playing in Europe, but they were big Boca or River fans. I think one was a Boca fan playing in the Italian league. I can't remember his name.
Mm-hmm.
He got sent off in suspicious circumstances for his team in Serie A. And somebody questioned, saying, oh, this wouldn't have anything to do with the fact that your team's playing in probably the biggest game in their history back in Buenos Aires this week, is it? And he went, nope. Cut to the game. There he is, pictured in the crowd.
No way.
Incredible.
Giving it a Aldi. So, it still happens, which is quite nice, even in the modern game.
The other good one, which is excellent, and I won't mention the referee who told me, but Ilhad Stews.
Yes.
Of Rangers fame. When he was at Bolton playing in the Premier League, I think it was Bolton, I'm sure it wasn't at Liverpool, but it was the international break coming up and obviously he's playing for Senegal, basically went to the referee just before kickoff and said, big man, I need a yellow card, because he was on like so many yellow cards. If he picked one up more, one more, he wouldn't be able to play at the weekend, so he could leave early to go back to Senegal. So he was going in with heavy challenges really within the first 5 minutes, and the referee was like, mate, you've got to calm down. I'm going to have to book you. He's like, no, book me. Go for it, please. I need to get booked. So he wasn't booking him. It gets to like the 90th minute and he just clatters into someone and he goes, look, you've got me, give me no choice. And he sends him off and he goes like, oh, and claps the ref. He walks down the tunnel. Anyway, at full time, Juve finds the referee and gives him a signed shirt, which he has to refuse because it looks like
bribery,
you know, favouritism or whatever. But thinking about that, like, how many stories are in football where players are just trying to get out of playing football? Like, it's a bit naughty, but yeah, there's some funny ones out there.
Oh, aye. I'll have a few up my sleeve.
When can you release this information, Laura?
After maybe 5 pints.
Oh, okay. So not in this podcast. How disappointing. No. Finn, you got anything for us?
My favourite thing that I saw was in the championship game on Friday night, the first team coach, John Young, at Arbroath, was wearing 2 pairs of glasses. Did you guys see this?
Yeah, yes. I don't, this is the first time he's done it either.
No, it's not.
I think he's worked it a few times, hasn't he?
But is he creating his own, like, varifocal lenses? Is that the point of it?
Does he know that you can get these in the same glasses?
Well, yeah, but see, this is the thing that I love about people from that side of the country. My mum's whole side of the family's from the East Coast. And what he'll have done, I can pretty much guarantee, he'll have walked into an optician's, seen the price of a varifocal lens, and been like, oh, no, I'm not doing that. I've got 2 perfectly good pairs of glasses at home. And then he's gone home and just worn both. And he's like, oh, it does a trick. Does a trick. Perfect.
It's a shame he's not at Queen's Park.
Why?
Because they get called 4 eyes if they wear glasses, don't they?
Want.
So if he's wearing 2, he'd have 8 eyes. Like a spider.
Oh, damn.
I'm a dad. I'm allowed. Should we talk about some of these April Fool's jokes that were going around?
No.
Okay then, Finn has spoken.
I hope you said that just to see Finn's reaction.
Kind of, to be honest.
Just for clarity, April Fool's is like the worst type of banter. I've never ever got it or find it funny. But I don't know, did you guys see anything that really tickled your funny bone?
No.
No.
There you go. It's not funny. It's just rotten patter. It's rubbish.
To be honest, I've been enjoying the meme that's been going around this week a bit more. I don't know if you guys saw it.
I know what you're talking about.
It was a Football Patter account that tweeted it. I've seen a few of them do it, but I think it was this one that took off. And it's the screenshot of Tangled. And it's basically the guy balling and he's pointing at his head and he's looking like, I don't give a what you think. But and the question is, what's a Scottish football opinion that will have you look like this? Basically, what wild football opinion have you got that you don't care that everyone just shouts at you and disagrees and calls you mental and thinks that's a ridiculous hot take? Because you're like, no, I'm right. Some of the best ones I thought were somebody said Celtic and Rangers need Scottish football, not the other way around.
Oh.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Doe a Deer is the most pointless, cringiest and embarrassing song that's ever been sung by the Tartan Army.
I'm not a massive fan of that song at all. I find it a bit cringy. To say it's the worst.
It's the most pointless, I think.
Definitely not my favourite one on the song sheet.
No. I did also like sponsors should not be allowed to pick Man of the Match awards.
Oh, hard agree, 100%.
Yeah. Because you know what? They only do it because they want to meet the player at full time.
Exactly, exactly.
For sure. Yeah. That's 100%.
Yeah, no, not having that.
there were some brilliant ones, like some genuinely quite well-made points. I mean, like one of my favourite ones I saw was by a guy who said all teams should be in the Scottish Cup first round. I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
It's fair enough. Yeah.
Somebody else said the split works very well and seventh having more points than sixth is a complete non-issue because it's 2 separate leagues by that point anyway.
Absolutely. I don't understand why we still have this argument of, the table looks stupid. It's 2 different tables.
Well, yeah, I know, but it's still, I don't know.
The points thing's by. The most important thing about the split is that it's every game matters. There are no dead rubbers because you're playing against the teams that you're struggling to stay up against. I think that's why the split works best.
And that is fair. Yeah, that is fair.
It absolutely becomes 2 different leagues. Absolutely. It's the same way in Belgium. Belgium split, I think, into 3 leagues at one point in the season.
The problem you have is when it's really, really tight between the likes of 3rd place all the way to the 8th place. That's the only time. I couldn't give a specific reason of when that might happen, but it could happen.
But then, by the same token, you're like, oh, but it's unfair that the league ends after 38 games and not 40 or something like that. It's just, it's an arbitrary point where you just like, by this point, you need to have amassed not even more points, level points with a better goal difference than the team below you. That's it. That's just the arbitrary cutoff point. So
how about this for a take? Dundee United and Dundee should join forces.
Oh, come on.
If you go back to the 80s.
And the 90s.
And the 90s, I think there was talk of it even happening.
Late 90s, yeah. There was another tweet that said, maybe not the attempted takeover he tried in 1999 of Dundee, but regarding smaller clubs, Jim McLean was spot on when he stated, we've got our resources spread too thin in Scottish football. 42 clubs in a professional setup is far too many for a country like Scotland.
Yeah.
One of the other points I thought was like this, that's really fair. Folk who moan about Livy's style of play must only watch them about 3 times a season. They're actually a very good footballing side. They just know what style is likely to be most successful in any particular game. And I think that's quite there.
And Stevie May! Bedlam! Chaos! Euphoria in the away stand! Blue limbs everywhere!
Okay, guys, some big news to really talk about over the weekend, though. First of all, starting with Barry Robson being named manager until the end of the season at Aberdeen. He's been on a great run as well since taking over. I think it's 5 wins from 7 games, and he took the Manager of the Month award as well in March. I mean, it seems to be the right decision. I just wonder if, with it being till the end of the season, he's still under, you know, under review, isn't it? It's not, they're obviously not certain, but do you think that's just because there's so much going on behind the scenes, because Alan Burrow's going in there as chief executive, etc. There's just too much going at the club to make some concrete decisions.
I think you might have answered your own question there, to be honest.
Cool, moving on.
Yeah. It's a very fair and valid point, though. Like, at this stage of the season, Aberdeen are in a comfortable position. They are fighting for Europe. They are unlikely to slip out of the top six. Why rock the boat so much when he's come in? He's done a good job for a fair number of weeks after Jim Goodwin left. I just don't really see the point of why somebody, as you're saying, Alan Burrow, have come in and straight away try and change everything when everyone's clearly content, happy. It is such a safe and sensible option just to kind of go, right, we've only got a few weeks left this season, let's just see it out to the summer. And then we can take a breath, reset, and then we can actually look at things instead of rushing into it, panicking, and then you suddenly see the impact on the league table.
Yeah. Elsewhere, Alan McGregor made his 500th appearance for Rangers. Probably Rangers' best ever goalkeeper, Findlay.
He's certainly up there. I know a lot of older Rangers fans will probably always go for Andy Gorham, but there's a real shout for McGregor, given the longevity of his career and what he's achieved and the trophies he's won and everything else. So, yeah, he's part of a very select group. I think only 13 other players in Rangers history have made 500 or more appearances for Rangers. He's now the club's all-time European appearance record holder. He's got 109 appearances for Rangers in Europe. He's also, when I was looking at some of his stats, I found this one amazing. So he's faced 62 penalties in his career. This is for all clubs that he's played at, but he saved 19 of them. So that's pretty much a third of the penalties he's faced, he's saved. And in particular, he's actually a nice wee stat for Rangers fans. He's saved a penalty against Celtic in 3 different decades, the 2000s, the 2010s and the 2020s.
I think that's a brilliant stat. That's actually really good. That's a really good stat.
Here's another fun stat for Laura as well. He's the first Scotland goalkeeper to have kept a clean sheet in his first 2 full international caps.
That's great. Well done for him. Let's move on.
I feel this only recently been equaled by Angus Gunn.
I knew you were going to go there, Finn.
Brilliant.
Like, I know he's not retiring from football, so there's no point kind of looking back in his whole career. And he obviously is long retired from Scotland, but just when you're kind of talking about there, Finn, I was just kind of thinking back to his kind of like big moments. And there's one I think always falls under the radar. It was the last game against Israel in the Nations League in 2018, which will probably blend into a lot of people's memories now because we played them so often. But it was, we were 3-2 up with only a few minutes left, and he made such a big save to deny Israel the draw. And taking all 3 points in that game was what booked our playoff place, which then led to us getting to Euro 2020. So even though he didn't end up playing in that tournament, he had a massive part to play to actually get us there. That's my favourite moment from him anyway, during his career.
What a lad. Close to your heart now, Laura. It came out earlier in the week that France are looking to legalise the use of safe and organised pyro over 3 years, I think. Whereas it looks like Scotland are looking to threaten fans using pyro with bans and stadium closures. Now, we did an episode, I wasn't on it, but the episode, No Pyro, No Party, earlier on this season, which was really, really insightful and interesting to kind of see how you can implement it and where it's been implemented before. But what's your take on this, Laura? Because I know Grant made a really great tweet on it, and how, why are we so just kind of caught in the past and not really investigating this well enough? But what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, this episode that you're talking about, we recorded this at the start of the season, and everything we said is still relevant all these months on. It just feels very backwards that we are still not having conversations on how to have safe pyro. And now we're seeing a country like France would have actually legalised the use of safe, organised pyro over the next couple of years to see how it works. And great, it's a start. They're talking to fans, they're putting initiatives in place to try and make it work. And they're actually, instead of trying to just cancel it and pretend it's not, it doesn't exist and just punish people for it, they're actually trying to accept that it's a thing and work out how we can actually have it in this day and age. And I just hope, I mean, I hope, isn't it? That's wishful thinking, isn't it? But if Scotland actually just took inspiration from this and thought, oh, here's a country being sensible, how can we try it? But instead, we have still got the media actually giving airtime to the police and their scare stories and threatening to close stadiums and ban supporters. I just don't get why we're still giving these people airtime. Stop it. Just can we start the conversation on how to move things forward rather than living in the past?
The scenes are amazing when you see, like, the visions, just the visuals are amazing. Did you see it may have been a few weeks ago now, but the ultras, Austria Salzburg's ultras went to the under sevens and there was about 7,000 of them all with flares watching these wee lads playing football. And it's just like, imagine playing in that and you're only like 6 years old. It's just a really great for atmosphere. But as long as you can do it safe. And that's the problem, is the people involved at the government level are just not interested. They're just not interested. So I don't think we will see anything soon, Laura, unfortunately.
You think I'm going to answer a stupid question like that?
Time to round up the weekend, starting in the Premiership, because big story coming out with Hearts going into a fourth defeat in five games, losing 2-1 to Kilmarnock and Rugby Park. It's been three consecutive losses. Already some Hearts fans are now coming out calling for Robbie Nielsen to be sacked. And a supporter even thought that the recent run justified spray painting "F*** off Nielsen" across the Hearts club crest mosaic outside the main stand. Which, look, we're all football fans and we all want the best for our club. And I know Hearts have been through a really bad period right now. And I know they've been really bad away from home over a number of seasons, and it's kind of been a tagline with Nielsen for a while. But this is madness, right? I'm not on my own. I know I'm not a Hearts fan, but it's a really bad patch. Aberdeen are now a point behind Hearts. You can't be calling for the manager. He's done enough to have some money in the bank here, no?
I think so. I think it's really difficult because it's not so much just looking at the results. I think it's the manner of the performances, I think, has been the thing that's coupled the results that have
That's fair.
Set a lot of Hearts fans and kind of on edge. But still, though, I mean, like, it is three defeats on the bounce, but, you know, one of them was against Celtic, who are just running away with the league. And then one's a rejuvenated Aberdeen side at Pittodrie, who have actually been very good at Pittodrie for most of the season. The Kilmarnock game, yeah, I can see how that's really disappointing. But I think overall, like, it reminds me a little bit of Aberdeen fans for a long time being quite annoyed with Derek McInnes when what he delivered was essentially pretty much what you could expect realistically of Aberdeen. So it was pretty much always finishing third in the league or even second a few times. They managed to split the Old Firm. The style of football might not have been amazing. You know, there might have been rubbish results. I think they probably underperformed in cup competitions. But in the main, you know, they're doing pretty well. I think they had, you know, let's not forget their European performances this season as well. They were in a really difficult group and they've not had their injury problems to seek as well this season. So I don't know. I do think you kind of have to look at the bigger picture. And I think all things considered, I still think Hearts have had a relatively decent season. It is maybe that it's just kind of unravelling at the wrong time now,
yeah,
towards the tail end of the season. This is really where you've got a resurgent Aberdeen and, you know, Hibs, goodness knows what they're going to do between now and the end of the season, but they could still be competing as well. I think from the position that Hearts were in, where it looked like third place was a certainty, now it's on a bit of a sugary peg. I think that's the reason why it's not looking so good.
If you look at this season compared to last, I think Hearts are basically 5 points less or worse off, right?
Yeah.
Over 30 games. Whereas the likes of fourth place and fifth place are kind of doing a lot better. So I think there's kind of like a 7-point swing. It's just a case of the other teams in the league have ended up doing better than they did last season. But the thing that you said, Finn, that I can back up is anytime Nielsen's had a full-time role at Hearts in the manager's post and had a full season, they've always finished third. So even if he doesn't finish third and he's got them a European place or taken them a European run already this season where they didn't finish last in the table, they finished respectably third. Even if they finished fourth, that shouldn't be seen as a failure. And I just think that with the likes of Craig Gordon being injured, Craig Halkett also being out, are massive, massive losses for them. And so much reliance on Lawrence Shankland. There just needs to be a little bit more recruitment, a little bit more softening of the edges. That's the way I look at it. Don't need to be scribbling F-offs over a club crest. That's just mental.
And even more problems as well now. Xander Clark went off injured on Saturday. So
yeah, Laura.
But then like, I think that Hearts should be looking to progress and challenge the Old Firm. They shouldn't just be kind of happy to settle for the third best team in Scotland. But no matter how bad things are in the books of Hearts fans, it's all contextualised here. Like, you can be annoyed at your team's performances and think the manager isn't doing well and the season's gone off the rails, whatever. I just don't think that it justifies spray painting over the club crest.
Yeah.
Like, Hearts have been in far worse positions in their history, recent history.
Yeah.
Just because you're sitting third and you've not won a couple of games doesn't justify doing that level of vandalism. I think there just needs to be a little bit of context here. It's a little bit of an overreaction, I think, at this stage.
Well, a Hearts fan may be able to come on the podcast and explain, look, there's this, and that's fair enough. But it's just overkill, man. Like, Hearts were in the Championship, Nielsen got them out, and yeah, I know he left the club as well, and it's harmed his reputation, but he's a player for Hearts as well, over 200 appearances for Hearts.
Yeah.
And the thing for me is they've got Hibs in about 2 weeks' time, and I don't think Hibs have beaten them since Boxing Day 2019. If they did now, how strong are the Hearts board going to be being able to listen to like massively dissenting fans? And I hope they do stick with them, because too often we see clubs that decide to hit the panic button. They're in third. Motherwell continued their incredible resurgence under Stuart Kettlewell, a sensational win at Easter Road, and it's now 4 wins from 6 under their new manager, and just a single loss, I think, which is against Rangers, so, you know, hard to come by. 2 stunning free kicks, Laura! I know how much of a fan you are of these, but most importantly, really interesting, Kevin Van Veen also getting a penalty, but makes him now the highest scoring Dutchman in a league season since Jan Venegor of Hesselink. This is in Scotland. So Jan Venegor of Hesselink scored 15. I think that's Kevin Van Veen on 16.
Yeah, it's a great stat. He's doing so well. And I know we had a wee bit of a debate in our group chat over the weekend. Andrew, you weren't that impressed because 6 of them were penalties.
Well, if Alan McGregor has saved over a third of his penalties, that's impressive. But if over a third of your goals are penalties, meh. I know you got to score them. That's fine. That's fair.
They're still goals at the end of the day.
I just said that.
They're still changing the game. They're still having an impact on his team's season. So I don't think it's less impressive.
I don't know. I prefer goals in play. Or free kicks.
Well, I think we all do. But I'm with Laura on this one. I don't get when people caveat. I've seen a lot of people talk about Lauren Shankland the same way this season. You know, he scored 20-odd goals in the league for Hearts, and they're like, oh yeah, but half of them are penalties. I'd be like, you still had to score them. Like, it's still a high-pressure moment in a game, and you need to score it. Statistically, you're more likely to score a penalty than most other types of goals, especially from open play, but they still need to be scored, and I don't think it should... A striker doesn't care. A striker doesn't care if half his goals are penalties. Still, you know, his goals have been crucial to Motherwell this season, so...
Yeah, Motherwell aren't going to care that half, that 6 of them were penalties.
No, because of course, that's not what I'm saying.
Yeah, but all 15 of them have played such a huge part in getting them out of the relegation zone.
But as much as the stat is interesting, it doesn't make him a comparable player to someone the likes of Jan Venegor of Hesselink.
Oh, I don't think so.
Or the De Boer brothers, who are midfielders. But the thing is, like, people will hang on to that, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you're a better striker than some of the some other players.
Well, no, I don't think we're arguing in terms of, is he the best Dutch striker to ever grace Scottish football? But and that's a whole different debate. But he's scored 16 important goals, and the fact that he's now what the top scoring Dutchman in the league, well played to him. I think all of them are quite happy that they've got him.
Sun Merin moved up to fifth
with a clinical 3-0 victory over Livingston. It stretches the run to just one defeat in five now. And the fight for top six is certainly getting tasty. They're away to Hearts and Rangers next and don't have the best of form on the road. I have to say Livingston are seventh, just a point behind sixth place Hibs, and that was their fifth defeat in the last eight games. And they've only managed to take points off teams in the bottom three during those eight games. Tough times for old Davy Martindale. And finishing with Celtic, saw Ross County 2-0. Alexander Bernabe, what a strike that was, by the way. Did you see this game?
It's a terrific strike from Bernabe. Celtic, they're still 9 points clear, 15 successive wins in all competitions, 23 games unbeaten in the league. It's just this relentless form. They just keep winning. It'll be interesting to see what happens this weekend, because I do think Rangers are probably in a better place now than they've been in a little while, so it'll be good. But Celtic at home especially, I can't see anything else apart from a Celtic win there.
A little mention for Hamilton, by the way, because we did feature them heavily last week after their impressive Challenge Cup victory, but they shipped 7 goals away to Dundee.
Yeah.
And they are rooted to the bottom of the Championship. You would have not expect, that's a little bit unfair, but after a big high that was, Laura, I mean, you got the vibe off of John Rankin. It's a shame as much as it is a delight for Dundee.
Yeah, it is, because I mean, I'd asked John, like, he wanted to let his players go out and celebrate and really let off steam, and I asked him why that was, and it was very much to kind of build that team spirit and feel that unity amongst the squad, and he was so confident that it was going to then have this knock-on effect to the last kind of few games this season to try and get out that relegation battle. Look, long-term, it may actually be the best thing, and it may still work, and this result may actually give them the kick up the arse they might need. Maybe a reality check for them as well. So on hindsight, like in a few weeks' time, we might be speaking very differently. I think he'll be very disappointed with the reaction he got, though. He's a very sensible head on those shoulders, and I don't think he's a manager you want to let down in that sense.
It was Dundee, you know, they were trying to get promoted. We're not trying to say that they should have won the game, but 7-0 is so such a depressing result.
I mean, it was a good weekend all round for Dundee, though, because just looking at it from their point of view, they're fellow title contenders Queen's Park fell to a second successive league defeat, and Ayr United also dropped points on Friday night in that game that we mentioned away to Arbroath. So they've got a game in hand over Queen's Park as well. So if they win that, they'll be in pole position going into the final for along with the season.
Arbroath are on a hell of a run as well. 7 games unbeaten. We've beaten Queen's Park in the last 2 games. Ayr and Dundee next week. So yeah, never bet against Dick Campbell. And we should mention Partick Thistle as well. Without a goal in the last 3 games. So Shirley Cove with a 5-0 win to stay fourth in a playoff spot. Who knows? Right, let's round up our roundup and move on, because we're going to talk about Kilmarnock, who had a massive win at the weekend. Let's get some reaction now after this.
We can't be having that, mate. You better get your finger out all right and make sure that you get the results.
Kilmarnock had one of their best results of this season so far, beating European chasing Hearts 2-1, and in turn extended the gap between themselves and the bottom two by 4 points in the table. But with just a few weeks left before the split and a run-in to make their eyes water, can they confirm survival before the final day? Well, here to give us his take is former head of media at Kilmarnock, Scott McClyman. Scott, what a weekend it was for Kilmarnock. It's been a decent couple of weeks, I have to say. Can you just kind of summarise the season so far as we approach, you know, a couple of weeks away from the split? It's going to be very, very tight, probably squeaky bum time, but what have you made of Kilmarnock under Derek McInnes so far this season?
Well, it's very, very much been a Jekyll and Hyde. At home, they play very well. The team is picking up, I think, 92% of their points at home. And away from home, they just can't seem to get that elusive victory. So it's been a very much a mixed bag. It's not been the most fun to go and follow Kilmarnock away from home this season, but hope springs eternal, and provides an opportunity maybe to get that elusive away win before the split comes in.
What was different at the weekend? Because we surprised a lot of people. I know Hearts haven't been great so far, but I mean, 3 points against a team who are, you know, fighting for third place for Kilmarnock, that's massive.
Yeah, I think Denny McInnes, to be fair, has found a way to play at home. Our best spell during the season probably came in round about October time, where you had Jordan Jones on one wing, Danny Armstrong, who's been a revelation this season, on the other wing, and just getting balls into the box, just giving the two wingers that freedom to try and hit the two attackers. In the past few weeks, that blueprint has served the team really well. They have introduced Gerald Dorsett into defence, which has allowed them to push up the field because he has additional recovery pace. So it allows the three central defenders to push up the field well. It allows the wingers to do their thing. And a word also for David Watson, who's come into the team over the last couple of weeks and has been an absolute revelation.
Daniel Armstrong's form is just something I wanted to pick up on, because he has really been the standout performer for Killy this season in so many ways. Looking over the Kilmarnock results this season, of the 7 league wins that Killy have had this season, he's scored in 6 of those matches, and quite often tends to be either the only goal or the match-winning goal. So how important has he been to the way that Killy have played this season?
He's been absolutely massive, yeah. You know, he probably didn't get the kind of game time that he maybe wanted in the Championship season, but to his credit, he worked really hard. He's been doing sessions with Chris Burke to improve his game, and that's really paying dividends this season. He's always been a kind of gallus wee guy. He's always had kind of faith in his own ability, but he's really shown it now on a consistent basis. And there was a point in the season where if it wasn't Danny Armstrong, it was the defenders scoring the goals. But, you know, to hit double figures for Danny, more than deserved his new contract that he got earlier this season, and the fans are delighted to have him for more time.
Scott, just going back to the Hearts game at the weekend, this felt like a massive 3 points. It opened up that wee gap at the bottom. I know it's not a big gap, but it almost feels like it's just so big with it being an unexpected win against a team up at the top end of the league, the two teams below you losing as well at the weekend. Do you see it as that sort of relief at the weekend?
Yeah, absolutely, because the previous two home matches, they had been ahead and they were pegged back. Callum Slattery against Motherwell, a fantastic free kick to share the points, and then Trey Wright for St Johnstone after Kilmarnock had been one up. So there was a sense that we couldn't keep throwing those opportunities away. We had to try and put a win on the board, and exactly as you said, with the other two relegation rivals playing the Glasgow Giants, there was an opportunity there to really create that gap, and it was so important. And you could feel the tension when the 7 minutes of added time went up towards the end of the game, and people thinking, surely not again, they've got hold out. And yeah, there was absolutely that relief. I think you saw in the celebrations from the players as well how big a win that is, and it just gives that platform now going into the final 3 games before the split to try and pass on that advantage, really.
The fear really is for Kilmarnock fans the record they have against teams around them as well, though, because you look at the games against Ross County last time out, they were heavy defeats, and going into the split, you know, how confident can Killy fans be that they'll stay up? Because it's probably going to go down to the last day.
Yeah, I think the team's in a slightly different place now to when it was just coming out of that late January, early February point in the window. There does obviously need to be tangible progress away from home. I don't think anyone would disagree with that, but results and the manner in which they've achieved those home results in the last few weeks, it does give confidence. There does seem to be a semblance of a plan that is working and is getting the best out of the team's main assets, and that's what Kilmarnock fans will be looking forward to.
Can I just ask, what were your expectations before the season started? Because I think by default, most times you look to the side that's being promoted up into the top flight from the Championship as one of the favourites to be contenders again to go back down. But I think because of how long Kilmarnock were established in the Premier League, and obviously in the not too distant past, we've had Steve Clarke, who's a very good manager, you know, taking the club to the dizzying heights of third. But were you confident with Killy coming back up this season that you would be surviving in the top flight, or did you feel that it would be a bit of a struggle this season being back up in the top division?
I think it's gone pretty much how I would expect it to be honest. I don't think you can underestimate just being relegated in that COVID season, just how much damage that can do to any club of that size. The recent account showed the club lost 1.8 million over that season in the Championship. And I think when you're then coming back into the top flight, there's going to be a period of adaptation, I think, because Derek was keen to get his kind of staff in place and the recruitment side. That didn't happen until September, so the summer window had closed. You know, I think he's on record as maybe saying he didn't quite get all the business that he would have wanted. So I think given all those factors and what happened on deadline day in January, where the two strikers end up leaving, there's no other forwards brought in. It was always going to be an uphill battle, and I think that's just playing out.
Are you able to shed any more light at all on what actually happened with that whole episode at the end of January? Because I think everybody's a bit in the dark about the whole Kyle Lafferty situation, because it seemed to be one of those players that he actually did so well in the spells at Kilmarnock, and just all of a sudden, you know, he was kind of released. Have you got any more light you can shed on that situation?
No, I don't. It was obviously a shock to everyone, I think, given what had happened earlier in the season. But I don't think there's any doubt on a footballing side, Derek would have been planning to have him as part of the squad and give him an option. But to be fair to the forwards, I think there's a semblance now of a partnership between Doig and Vassell that is starting to bear fruit. And as I say, with Armstrong and Jones starting to kind of hit balls out in the box now, you're starting to see a more impact for those guys. But yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that they would have planned for the second half of the season with Kyle Lafferty. The fact that that's not happened and remains a bit of a mystery, well, who knows, in the fullness of time, maybe we'll find out.
I do wonder for Kilmarnock, if they stay up in the Premiership for this season, Dennett McInnes stays in the summer too, how well could he be backed? You did mention 1.8 million lost during that COVID season. That's going to damage any club at this level. But is the club in a good place to strengthen in the summer if they stay up?
I would have thought so. I don't think you create the kind of framework that they have with Ross Richardson, who worked with Derek at Aberdeen. I don't think you create that unless you're going to try and create a more sustainable squad. And I think that's been something that Kilmarnock fans would have been looking for a long time. The nature of the results over the past few seasons have meant there's been massive changes in the squad, and that lack of continuity has not been welcome for either fan or people working within the club. I think to try and get a bit of an identity post the kind of Steve Clarke years is something that the club really wants to do. And I think they've made moves to kind of create that. It just needs that all-important thing, which is staying up.
And McInnes can do that. He's created identities before. Some Aberdeen fans got a little bit tired of that identity, but, you know, he could have backed well. He's a proven manager at this level.
Yeah, I think exactly as you say, he knows the landscape. He knows the kind of players, I'm sure, that he would be looking to bring in should Kilmarnock stay in the league. I've got no doubt about that. That's what he's been working on during his time with the club. And I think if they can just get over the line, there's a great opportunity for Kilmarnock to really build from there, build a squad with some more young players in it, and really properly put his mark on the team.
That's it from us this week. My thanks to Laura and Finn for joining me once again, keeping me company. Thanks to Scott McClyman as well, talking about Kilmarnock. Will they stay up? Who knows? We'll find out in a few weeks. Most importantly, thank you, the listener. We love you. We love you. Leave us a review if you want, or if you don't, don't. But it'd be really good if you could tweet us at TSFS Podcast. So now it is that time again to go and listen to something else. Bye.